We all know someone who is, let's just say, not the best conversationalist when they start talking about wine. They probably name drop, they might use obscure terms. Frankly, sometimes they are a complete bore to be around. And if you don't speak wine speak, it can seem like the whole language of wine is almost meant to keep people out. Sometimes, you know, you just want to yell at someone, like, what do you mean? This is a big, bold, structured glass with notes of crushed raspberry. What does that even mean? Well, our contributor Ali Bouzari went to the wine critic Esther Mobley for some answers about the madness and the method, the way we talk about wine.
Hi, Esther.
Hey, Ali.
Thank you for coming in and chatting about wine with me.
I'm so happy to be here.
You have a way of speaking fluent, normal person. And I want to start by asking, do you and all of your colleagues, the experts of the industry, do you guys always know what each other is trying to say? Is there universally agreed upon words? Or do you guys also have moments where you're like, what does chewy actually mean?
So I think the way we talk about wine is always a kind of nebulous mix of science and poetry.
Hmm.
When we talk about perceiving a wine's acidity, we use all kinds of words to convey that sensation. Zippy, racy, searing. I mean, those are words that are kind of in the wine lexicon to convey this wine, you can perceive it's acid. Sure, maybe my perception of acidity is more sensitive than yours. Maybe I like more acidity in my wine than you do, so I might perceive a wine to be balanced with a different level of acidity. The same is true of certain flavor descriptors, where when we talk about a wine having a green pepper aroma,
mm-hmm.
we actually are talking about perceiving the compound pyrazine. And when it's present, we really are talking about perceiving that thing, and we can know what someone else means when they say that. Where it gets tricky is when we get into the kind of fruit salad bowl and you tell me you're talking about crushed raspberries or, you know, the bottom side of a wet river stone. And I celebrate the possibility of coming up with a kind of poetic new way of describing something that can be evocative. But I think we might kind of lose our kind of sense of shared calibration
mm-hmm.
when we get really flowery with those words.
So is there like an internal reality check, an internal balance that you try to find yourself when you are getting impressionist in your description of wine that helps you stay at least grounded in your own reality and not wandering into things that just sound impressive?
I struggle with this as I write because, first of all, I should say that writing tasting notes is a pretty small portion of what my job actually is.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think you'll read some tasting notes that are like, this wine feels like running through a field of daisies,
mm-hmm.
or this wine feels like, you know, the end of the night when your dance partner looks into your eyes and the moon is shining. I mean, actually, I think those might help some people get in the mood, get kind of a sense of what this wine is. And of course, they're completely imprecise, completely impressionistic. They're all poetry, no science. And yet, sometimes I think maybe that gets closer to a helpful thing to give a reader. I mean, I think sometimes, do I care if a wine has notes of blueberry and lavender? Or would I rather know, like, this is a big wine. This is a meaty wine. This is a structured wine. This wine is like, you know, kind of a big barrel coming at you, as opposed to this is a slight wine. This wine is light on its feet. This is a subtle wine. I mean, I actually think those are the questions I would rather know if I'm choosing what to drink. And yet it's maybe like its own kind of broken language.
So let's talk about the science side for a second. So when somebody says that there are notes of lavender or apricot or coconut in a wine, it's kind of mind-blowing to think that that means there are actually aromas in that wine that you might find in a coconut or in an apricot or in lavender. Is that true?
It's true for some descriptors that we use. Yes. So a great example is we often say that Syrah has a peppery aroma. And that might sound as silly as the wet river rock thing. However, Syrah actually has high concentrations of a compound called rotindone, which is found in, guess what, black pepper, as well as a number of herbs like marjoram and oregano. I always think wine language is kind of doublespeak because we're using words that we know. We're using words that everybody knows. We're using words like, you know, black cherry and wet cardboard. And yet we're not actually perceiving the same thing we would if we had a cherry in front of us. And I can remember one of my first jobs where I encountered wine was working at a wine shop in Boston. And I can remember the owner of the wine shop tasting a wine with me and being like, this smells like black cherries. And I was like, well, this doesn't actually smell like black cherries, but I know exactly what you're you're describing, what aroma you're describing. And then you smell that in another wine and you're like, okay, well, I know to call that black cherry. So it's deceptive because you actually have to like learn a new meaning for words you already know.
Yeah. For me, I talk about flavor a lot, and it always starts with, like you're saying, the data that your nose, your tongue, your eyes, your ears, and your sense of touch are feeding you, and then all of your memories and baggage and things like that.
Yeah.
Let's go into a couple of those. So one of the first ones that I want to talk about is tannins. What actually are tannins and where do they come from?
So tannins are texture. And if I recall correctly, tannins are actually like making you salivate, right? Mm-hmm. They're drying your mouth out.
Why is it a good thing in wine? What does it do for us?
Well, like everything, there can be too much tannin and it can certainly be out of balance. And tannins are really only a thing when we talk about red wine for the most part, because white wines are essentially fermented without their skins and seeds. So they don't get that contact with them that would give them the tannins. Tannins are structure, and structure is one of the kind of key things that we should be talking about more when we talk about wine. But you know, tannins are what give the wine shape, what give it some give. You know, it's not just juice that's like flowing through your mouth. It actually lingers in certain parts of your mouth and stays there. The kind of conventional wisdom is that tannins make a wine pleasant to eat with something fatty. So that's why a bold Cabernet and a steak are considered like a perfect pairing, because the fattiness of a big cut of beef kind of gets refreshed by the astringency of the tannins. And a lot of wines that have a kind of aggressive tannic profile are really unpleasant to drink when they're young, like Barolo, for instance. Barolo, which is from Piedmont in Italy, Nebbiolo grape, a really young Barolo can just be like, I mean, I think we've probably all had a wine where you take a sip and your mouth is just so dry and it's unpleasant. But over time, it mellows, it softens. The tannins can take on different kinds of sensations. They can become silky. They can become what we call fine-grained. They can become supple and velvety. I mean, that can be a really pleasant, beautiful sensation in your mouth.
You've mentioned structure and big, and that's a thing I'm used to seeing on wine lists, as things being described as big and bold. And like, what is big? Where does big come from?
So I think, I mean, it's a vague term that can incorporate a lot of different things. I think primarily big can be a factor of weight. Is it a full-bodied wine? Is it a weighty wine? A Pinot Noir versus a Syrah. A Pinot Noir is lighter bodied. It's kind of a smaller wine than a Syrah typically. You can see if it's translucent in the glass versus opaque. But also you can just feel, I mean, the thing people would tell you in like an introductory wine class is, on your tongue, does it feel like you're sipping water, milk, or heavy cream?
Oh, so there's viscosity. There's like thickness differences.
Yeah.
Do you have categories that you go to or that you refer people to if they're just trying to pick their way through and they know a couple things that they like and they know a couple of wines that they've hated? How do you recommend people organize their mind when trying to figure out what wine to drink?
I really try to give a couple of guidelines to the person who's helping me, because the sommelier of the restaurant or the person at a wine shop really knows what's there. Last night I was at a wine bar and I first of all, I just walked in and I said, I want something cold. But what I'm,
that's what, amazing. But I just have to say that I feel so validated that that is a emotion that you would express. That
completely.
I feel seen.
But I think what I mean when I say, and I say that a lot, is, you know, I mean, I want a white wine probably, but I want something refreshing in that moment. I want something probably high in acid, not super oaky, fruity. So the kinds of things I'd say if I'm at a restaurant, I'll say, okay, we want a light bodied red. Mm-hmm. You know, we want it more on the savory side than the fruity side. Mm-hmm. That's a directive I would give. Or I'm looking for a white kind of medium in body, and I'd love some kind of minerally component. I mean, that's a vague term too. But what I'm meaning there is I don't want something that's just like as zippy and tangy as a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. I don't want something as rich as an oaky, buttery Chardonnay. I want something that somewhere falls in the middle. And I mean, I think the great myth is that people think if you really know about wine, you'll just be able to point to a bottle on the list. And no one, I mean, occasionally I might do that if I see a wine I know and I really like. But to me, the greater fun is to ask for some help so that I can discover something new.
Esther, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Ali.
Esther Mobley covers the California wine, beer, and spirits beat for the San Francisco Chronicle. And Ali Buzari is the author of Ingredient, Unveiling the Essential Elements of Food.